So at the moment of his awakening, he understands so thoroughly what the causes are of the process of death and rebirth that he knows that he's not fueling it anymore. That's nirvana number one. It's called nirvana with residues because there still is karma from past lives that needs to be worked out. And then eventually, about 40 years or so later, at the end of his life, he has the experience of parinirvana, of complete extinction, when all of it burns out. And the Buddha is released completely from the cycle of death and rebirth. These two moments, then, are called nirvana with residues and nirvana without residues. Nirvana without residues also is sometimes called parinirvana, the Buddha's complete extinction. Now, we face here with the concept of nirvana a dilemma that's fairly similar to the dilemma we faced earlier with the concept of suffering. Nirvana is spoken of in the Buddhist tradition as being extremely desirable, something that we would really like to seek. And yet we have to confront it, I think, initially as being a rather harsh concept, a concept that has to do with the extinction of things that for many of us, at least, are pretty desirable, pretty positive in our normal understanding of human life. So we have to ask ourselves this basic question, you know, why do Buddhists treat this as being such a desirable goal? What's so great about this? Why would you ever want to seek nirvana if it involves the extinction of all of these things that to many of us are really quite desirable? The first answer to this question, I think, really has to be one in which we look very carefully again at the Indian assumption about the nature of reincarnation. I think the concept of nirvana forces us really to take quite seriously, in a way that we may not even have done initially, the negative aspect and the negative evaluation of the concept of reincarnation in this Indian tradition. If reincarnation is something you don't want, if you really don't want to come back again and again in some future life, then really what you want to do, what you seek, is the stopping of that. And the Buddha, bless his wonderful heart, the Buddha found how to do that. That was the great thing that he discovered. So that if samsara is something you want to escape, the Buddha showed the way. He found how to do it and found how to stop it. So nirvana is negative in an appropriate way in the Indian tradition, because samsara is something that you would like to avoid and you would like to escape. Now, I think it's interesting when you approach nirvana this way to think a little bit about how the concept of nirvana compares to concepts of the ultimate goal of human life that might be closer to home. For many of you who are Jewish or Christian, you have in your minds, I suspect, an image of God, of that image that Jewish and Christian people make of ultimate reality, at some point in the mythic past, looking at the chaos of creation, looking in a certain sense at nothing, and making something come into existence. Christian doctrine of creation is called creatio ex nihilo, creation from nothing. So God looked at nothing and made something come into being. And I think it's fair to say that for Christian people, and this would be true for Jewish people as well, and probably true for Muslims, although I don't know the tradition as well as I know those other two, that when you wake up in the morning, what you imagine you're doing is something that is essentially creative. You look at the chaos of the day, the nothing that the world presents you with, this blank slate of a day, and you try to make something beautiful come into existence. Creativity is something that we strongly value. We search for being. We search to bring new things into existence. It's really fascinating to think that the Buddhist tradition is almost exactly the opposite. The Buddha faced a situation in his own life in which things had been going on from beginningless time.